From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made earlier this week when the organizers of the annual Park Ave Festival announced they will cancel their festival once again this year. The announcement might have come as a shock. After all, just about all adults will have had the chance to get vaccinated before the festival, and outdoor activity is many, many times safer than indoor activity for unvaccinated people. Why cancel the festival? Well, Park Ave is not the first. Cornhill has canceled. The Jazz Festival is looking to move to Henrietta for this year. Others are scaling back. It's a strange set of circumstances. The decline in hospitalizations, the success of vaccines, the return of warm weather, and the cancellation of outdoor festivals nonetheless. We've spoken privately to a number of festival organizers. Almost all express frustration in Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has waited longer than most other state leaders in issuing new guidance regarding outdoor events. This week, finally, we saw an update from the governor, and yet it still didn't seem to make much sense. Indoor office buildings are permitted higher capacity limits than outdoor gatherings. What exactly is the science behind that decision? Well, we have tried to compile something close to a comprehensive list of how festivals are approaching the 2021 season, either canceled or scaled back or full go. And we are still adding to the list, and our guest this hour will help us understand what they are weighing. Let me welcome them now. Erica Fee is the producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival. Erica, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Orlando Ortiz is president of the Puerto Rican Festival. Orlando, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff Springett is CEO of Rochester Events. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for being with us.
Evan, nice to be here. Thank you.
And Scott Winter is the director of public relations for Fairport Canal Days. Scott, thanks for making time.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm just going to ask all of you to kind of give me a little bit of a rundown. And Jeff, let me just start with you because, you know, as the CEO of Rochester Events, let listeners know what you are involved with in terms of festivals.
We are, you know, as you mentioned, a very scaled back event this year. We're playing by the rules that were in effect a couple of months ago, and they change every day. As a matter of fact, I just wrote the health department yesterday and said, what are we doing about a few items that we have questions about? So, you know, we're controlling attendance at any one given time in our arts and crafts show, for example, and that's because we're able to do so. So that's a big overview real quick, and it took a lot of discussions and a lot of time to get to this point.
And when it comes to Lilac Festival, I think that's the closest one on, that would have been on the calendar. What's going on there, Jeff?
Well, we open a week from this Friday, actually. We changed the calendar dates. Actually, we were talking about changing the calendar dates before COVID hit. So instead of going 10 consecutive days, we're going 3 consecutive weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week, this year, rather. So that gives us 3 weekends instead of 2, and it also gives us a little better chance maybe with the weather, because as you know, we're in May, and I've seen it snow in May, and I've seen it be 85 degrees in May in Rochester. So we've got a 5K and 10K race on the 23rd, which is the last day of the festival. Our arts and crafts show is all 3 weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And then we've got our kids' little mini kids amusement park that will run all 9 days of the event. We've got a mini farmer's market that will run all 9 days. And then we've got our special events tent that we've had for many years, where we've had in the past a wine tasting and a craft beer expo. And we're doing those events again this year, but totally different format. In that everyone who comes into those events will be seated at a table. The beverages will be brought to them along with food that they've ordered, because I think up until today, maybe, you know, talk about things in flux. If you were a restaurant and you were serving alcohol, you had to serve food with that alcohol.
Yep.
So we worked with some of our local food vendors to come up with some sharing plates for the table, So when you order, when you buy a ticket online, you get a table reservation, you order your food, it gets delivered to you at the table once you sit down. And the tickets have been very popular and selling well, but just yesterday the state announced that there's, I don't quite understand it, but the Democrats are vacating the executive order that Governor Cuomo put into effect, saying that you had to eat while you were drinking. So go figure.
So who knows how that affects you? Who knows? Okay, and real quick.
I think it's a good idea to eat while you're drinking.
No. I hear that. No, I understand the point you're making. But real quick, Jeff, any live music at the Lilac Festival this year?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we were going to get to that. In the special events tent, we've got six nights of live entertainment, or six afternoons and evenings of live entertainment in the same bistro setting. And we've got seven different bands performing, everybody from popular local bands. One of the things that we decided to do this year when we decided to try and do the Lilac Festival was engage as many local businesses and performers as possible. So that's exactly what we've done.
But Jeff, hold on. I got to ask you about this. So that's in the tents. That's not, I mean, so it's technically in a covered setting, and you have got to pay to get into the tents. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. So it is less safe than being outdoors. It is indoors.
No. Well, it depends. The interpretations that I've gotten is if we leave two sides of the tent open.
Sure. You get airflow.
It's like being outside.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So you've got airflow. It's not like a full office building. You've got some airflow, but it's still covered. So it's not, I mean, it's sort of outside, not fully outside. And you got to pay to get in. So it's not as egalitarian. I mean, these are the changes that I know you feel like you had to make. But to me, this looks like a festival that is a little less accessible. Is that unfair, Jeff?
Yes and no. I think you're kind of jumping to a little bit of a conclusion. We've always had paid events in that tent. We've had comedians perform in the tent, and so we can't do what I call shoulder to shoulder concerts. I mean, that's pretty obvious. So you can say it's egalitarian, but our options were to cancel the festival or do what we could do safely.
Yeah.
So we've been criticized by many people that, or the festival has, or the, not so much we, but the government has been criticized because there's no free music. Well, guess what? There is no free music anywhere right now. I mean, maybe someone correct me, but there's no party in the park situation. There's no outdoor concerts with tickets. They just, you know, unless they're pods or something like that. So, you know, the options were to cancel for a second year or to do what we could do safely.
Yeah, I got you. So, I got you. Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a little unfair to say, well, you know, we're eliminating free concerts and it's not good for everybody. Yes and no. I mean, we can't do the free concerts.
I'm not necessarily criticizing you. I'm just observing the scenario right now, and I know it's a hard spot.
Well,
Jeff,
I think you have to take a wide look at it. You know, COVID's not easy. You know, and you can ask your other promoters what they're doing with free shows shoulder to shoulder.
Well, let's do that. Scott Winter, Director of Public Relations for Fairport Canal Days. Canal Days, for now, is on. It will be when, and what's the scenario, Scott?
Well, it's very similar to what Jeff has described. I mean, we're dealing with the same variables on a daily basis. I will say that in the past several days, we've gotten a lot more movement and collaboration with the county health department has been particularly helpful in helping us identify what is permissible and what is not. And also we're starting to get some feedback from the state level. And it has been frustrating because we've been trying to engage, and without any clear indication of who actually are the responsible parties for determining what we can and can't do. So that's been a very difficult thing to navigate. And, you know, maybe we have to create those association of festival promoters, because maybe together we can figure out a path that's going to be more expedient in the future if this is the way it's going to be. But in general, Fairport Canal Days will be operating at, we're proposing right now, half its normal footprint and half the number of artists and craftspeople, and a dramatically reduced number of food vendors, which isn't of itself a big problem for the customer, because we have such a wonderful base of restaurants and breweries and winery and distillery here in Fairport anyway. So essentially, we're going to put this show together on the north side of the canal, the north side of the village, along Route 250, or Main Street as it's known. And our usual major hubs will still be major hubs. So the Box Factory parking lot and the parking lot for the Fairport Junction, which is our festival site as well. Right now, we're in a holding pattern on live music because it's just too hard to define for us. I hear what you're saying about the egalitarian approach to major open festivals, and that is a true statement. But on the other hand, we too, for our Canal Nights concert series, have always charged a nominal fee of $5 or $10, depending on the bands we're booking, to help, frankly, cover expenses related to the hiring of those bands.
And could that still happen, Scott? Could that still happen the same way it's been happening?
Well, officially right now, I don't think we're looking at doing Canal Nights for the reasons that Jeff has cited. You know, the shoulder-to-shoulder concert, which those shows have been, are very difficult to pull off right now. But if the food component goes away and they relax some of the requirements relative to social distancing, maybe we can do a modified version of that. But I will tell you that if we do, and we have a very, you know, like a 50% reduction in our capacity, which on that site is about, not that much, it's about 1,500 people, then we're going to have to look at a price increase in order to offset, you know, the loss in the revenue required to make a profit. And with Canal Days and actually all the Fairport festivals, Music Fest and Oktoberfest, they're volunteer-based, they're not-for-profit organizations, and the revenue goes back into the communities through the various organizations that raise the funds. So for us, you know, and certainly for for-profit producers, losing money is not an option. We're doing this to help the community and to raise money. The other point I'd like to make, Evan, is that we did some research here a few years ago in anticipating the lift bridge being out for a few months. And it's kind of quaint now to look back on that and think that we thought the lift bridge was going to be the real problem. But
is it back open, by the way? Scott, is the lift bridge back open?
Yeah, the million-dollar question. Right now, the official line from the state is that it will be open by the end of spring, which is June 20th, which does not help us for Canal Days.
Okay.
So it's another reason we're kind of cutting the show in half geographically. But what we do know for sure through doing surveys of pedestrian traffic on our bridges, surveying our merchants for peak sales volume periods throughout the year, and overlaying that with our festival schedules, our festivals drive the highest volume of sales for our local merchants every year, the largest being Canal Days, with Music Fest and Oktoberfest being about even for the amount of economic activity they generate. So these are really, really important events, especially for small towns. We've heard about fire departments and their struggle. It's incredibly important. This money makes a huge difference in these small communities.
So let me, before I let you go, because Scott Winter's got to head out to a meeting in just a couple minutes here. So last question for you, Scott, would be this. Privately, when I talk to festival organizers, there's a little bit more there's a little bit more edge in the frustration. And I understand you got to be a little bit diplomatic. I mean, everybody's hoping to kind of figure some things out. But festival planning doesn't start in the end of April. It doesn't start in May. I know it goes on for months. It goes on for years in some cases. And I know that a pandemic, to Jeff Springett's point, is hard. COVID is hard. But what I'm hearing time after time when I talk to festival organizers is a lack of clarity and communication. particularly with New York State and particularly focused on Governor Cuomo and Dr. Zucker, who make a lot of decisions on this. Let me give you a quote that a City of Rochester official gave me yesterday. Couldn't use the name, but could say this is a high-ranking city official on the subject of festivals. Quote, "We're eager to work with the state to gain further clarity so we can provide clarity to event organizers in Rochester. Any limitation puts a huge burden on them and comes with tremendous costs. We'd be thrilled to facilitate conversations with the state if they will have them." End quote. That is a very direct statement from a City of Rochester official saying, look, we've been in the dark too, and we understand why people are tired of it. So, Scott, if things could have been done a little bit better from your point of view, I know it's not a perfect scenario, but just to sort of plan better, knowing vaccines were coming, vaccines are effective, et cetera, what needed to happen? What has not happened that has frustrated you?
Well, it is very frustrating that, you know, 14, 15 months into this pandemic and having already lost the festival season, that no one in authority at the state level has figured out a process by which they can make some determinations and give us some direction. To me, they're kind of a derelict in their duty to provide that kind of information. Clearly, the quote that you just provided indicates that it's a pretty universal feeling. But having said that, Grandma used to say you catch more flies with honey than vinegar. And so I don't want to go too deep on that.
I get you.
I would concur with their position. And it is an incredible frustration for us. But conversely, I want to emphasize that the village government and administration has been very cooperative with us, very encouraging and very affirmative. We're finding the county to be the same way, but they shall go nameless. But at the very highest levels of the county government, we're hearing the same kind of statements being made.
Frustration with New York State.
With the governor's office specifically. I mean, let's be honest, in New York State, it's right there. It's the apex of all governance. And if we get jammed up, it's because it's not moving through the governor's office. So that's my view. I don't speak for everyone, but that's my understanding.
Yeah.
From a lot of people like you who I've spoken with who are in higher positions and are expressing the same kind of frustration.
Yeah, and real quick, Scott, to the point that some listeners might say, well, okay, you've got support from your local government. Why don't you just say, hey, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to make our own rules locally. I have been told time and time again from city officials, from others, that it does not work that way. Similar to, if you remember when Bill de Blasio, New York City mayor, and New York City schools tried to make decisions on schools, the governor came right out the next day and said, not his call, it's mine. And
Yeah. What
I'm hearing on festivals is it's not up to Fairport, it's not up to the city of Rochester, it's not up to Henrietta. It's not up to, you know, Hornell. It's up to the governor's office, and you can't sort of overrule with home rule locally. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, home rule only gets you so far, and it doesn't get us that far. And where the governor is concerned, and it really is, and this isn't about Democrat versus Republican. Anytime you have one party in control of the state house, the legislature, and the Senate, this is what you're going to get. And I don't care which party it is. You're going to get this kind of autocracy. And again, I'm speaking on a personal level, but it's not working for business in the state, obviously. And it's certainly unfair, given what we know now about the pandemic, about COVID, with the vaccines available. I'm in complete agreement with you and Rachel Barnhart on this one. And honestly, I'm not often in agreement with you guys on some of these issues, but I 100% agree here. And I'm also speaking as someone, my wife and I both had COVID in March, and we had it quite severely. Having survived it, I feel like I kind of earned my stripes to speak frankly about how I feel about it. And I think we should be able to do these festivals, and individual responsibility needs to be heightened and restored, and home rule needs to be reinstated so that we can make our own choices.
Scott Winter is the director of public relations for Fairport Canal Days, which will operate somewhat scaled back coming up in early June. Scott, thanks for making time for the program.
Thank you very much. I'm actually off to a meeting with the mayor and others about the lift bridge, so hopefully we'll get some good news today.
All right. That's Scott Winter from Fairport Canal Days. We're talking festivals this hour, and if you're just joining us, just to sort of clarify Scott's point there, he's probably referring to a social media dialogue that Legislator Barnhart, I was involved with, and others. The only point I'm making, and I will sort of stick with this point, I'd love to talk to the governor about this, is, you know, when you keep saying, well, we'll get you guidance, we'll get it to you, I mean, it's almost May. Festivals do not get planned in May. Festivals do not get planned in April. And yes, things change in a pandemic, but we also had a very good sense starting in December that vaccines work and that we would be on a very good course for close to full adult vaccination, or at least full optional vaccination for adults, by spring. And so the notion that you start figuring out now, well, it's too late for some festivals. And that's what we are hearing privately, a lot of frustration. And that's all I'm saying is the guidance can't start now, and it is essentially starting now. And so it's been tough. It has been tough, and you can understand why festival organizers, some are canceling, some are scaling back, some are trying to hang in there. Not an easy spot. Not an easy spot to be in. Orlando Ortiz, president of the Puerto Rican Festival, which is coming up in August. That is still on. Is that right, Orlando?
That is correct, although we don't have, you know, actual dates yet. As many other folks before me have said, we're kind of in a holding pattern. Dating back 2 years, we celebrated our 50th anniversary, which was a huge milestone for us. And, you know, looking back now, I'm happy we were able to celebrate our 50th. In a good way. And, you know, I think people were eager to continue that celebration and kind of usher us into our new, you know, our next milestone. So right now we're looking at many options on the table, you know, holding it in August, September. Locations are an option. As other promoters have said, you know, the scale of the event might be different or will be different, depending on the ever-changing guidelines from the state. So we continue to be in a holding pattern. Obviously, the restrictions, logistics behind it. We have been planning all year, as you mentioned, Evan. We don't just start planning now. And, you know, with the changing guidelines, it certainly has become challenging. So we're continuing to look at possibly looking at local bands, you know, local vendors. Obviously, our volunteer base is eager to step up in whatever fashion that we need them to help out and assist. Moving forward to do something celebrating. Obviously now it's a little bit different than last year. Last year everything was getting canceled, and now it's everybody's kind of looking more optimistically at what could we be doing this year to celebrate our culture. The festival is usually a very family-oriented event, more like a family reunion. So when it comes to all the state guidelines, as far as keeping people separated, I have a concern just because of our nature of our culture. I know how we are, and I want to make sure that we keep our patrons safe in whatever we do, you know, at the Puerto Rican Festival. So we're looking forward to doing something. What that looks like, unsure yet, but looking for possibly the end of May to make a call as to what we really are going to be doing, location-wise and scale.
And I know you'll be, you know, certainly very public in your announcements about what you decide, Orlando, for the Puerto Rican Festival this year. I want to follow up with you by reminding listeners that as we talk about festivals, the science is very, very clear. Number one, outdoors is just a different world of risk than indoors. It is by orders of magnitude safer. Now, the new variants that we are dealing with are, more troubling, and they're more transmissive. But we still have pretty good, consistent data that outdoors is just a different situation. And remember, we're in a community where most adults can be vaccinated now, literally yesterday, but certainly by most of these festivals. That's why we're talking about, the options that are there, or maybe the frustrations that festival organizers have and maybe not getting some clarity. Orlando, what do you need most from government right now?
So right now would be clarity on the capacity restrictions. I think we're very, at least from my standpoint, we're very clear on some of the restrictions in terms of requiring people to be vaccinated or have a COVID test, 3 days before. I know the Excelsior Pass is another option that's being introduced and pushed heavily. But for us, it's more clarity on the capacity side. I know the state fair just got, announced, and, within, I think it was 18 days or something like that. And, looking at something like that scale, I'm sure that it's not going to be 200 people or 500 people attending this event. So for me, it would be clarity on the capacity standpoint.
Yeah, and the capacity thing is a strange one. Governor Cuomo announcing earlier this week that outdoor gatherings can bump the capacity from 25 to 33% now, even though indoor offices can soon operate at 75% capacity. And indoor offices are much more of a trouble in a pandemic than just about anything you can do outdoors, with the exception of mass kissing festivals. So, and I don't think that exists yet, though in Rochester there's festivals for just about everything. So, so it just doesn't quite seem consistent, but we will see if that guidance does change. And, of course, the caveat here is that if there is a COVID variant that escapes vaccination and inoculation, well, it resets everything. And we'll talk about that. But right now, go ahead, Orlando. Yeah.
I was just going to say the guidelines that you just mentioned, I don't know if it's clear enough that it is supported to like festivals and live entertainment.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Gathering. So it's like, well, I'm an outside gathering. You know, we're right. celebrating our culture. We're gathered together outside. So do I meet that guideline? I don't know. So it's a lot of interpretation.
I think that's an important point. We're not exactly sure yet if outdoor gatherings means festivals of all sizes, festivals of certain sizes, or that's a whole other category. We shall see. Erica Fee is not only the producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival, but she is one of the most ardent students of the pandemic of anyone I know. In fact, has been involved in vaccine trials, talked about on this program.
Oh, thank you.
So I know that you have done your homework on these issues. Right now, right now we know that the variants are, more transmissive than the original COVID, but we also don't see evidence that the variants are escaping the vaccines. Again, I'll say if one does, it resets the whole ballgame, and that will be awful, but we'll deal with it. Right now, at least we should be heartened that is not happening. Is that as you see it? I mean, are you feeling that, hey, we got to be serious about these variants, but at least right now the vaccines are still effective?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. And, as you have said, certain things like being outdoors, for instance, that is something that is far safer with all of the variants.
Absolutely. So as the producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival, it is always in September. What is the current plan for 2021?
Well, I mean, how long is a piece of string? No, for real. Luckily, our festival is in September 2021. As all the other organizers have stated, the guidelines change quite frequently. The other situation that we're all in that I don't think anyone stated is that we're watching guidelines change in other states and in other countries, and they're not changing here. That's been kind of frustrating because we're of course then planning and hoping that our plans are matching the changes that are occurring elsewhere and that New York State will catch up. Right now we are planning what I guess the trendy term now is a hybrid festival. We will have some digital offerings because there are so many shows right now that are actually digital, but we're also going to aim for both some indoor and some outdoor shows. Some of our venues will be closed. Jiva Theater Center, for instance, will not be reopened indoors by September. School of the Arts will not be open indoors by September. So it's going to look different than it has in previous years, but we are persevering.
Just looking at new guidance that came down in the last couple of hours from New York State, starting May 17th, bars and restaurants will end curfews for outdoor seating. Curfews for indoor seating ends May 31st. So there is a lot changing, and there is some looking ahead here. But from your perspective, Erica Fee, what has been the most difficult, and have you had frustration with any of the levels of government that you deal with?
Oh, yes. I mean, huge frustration. And I think that the number one most frustrating thing has been the lack of benchmarks, because I used to live in London, as you know, and I produced in the UK, and I'm watching the guidelines come out there, and they're just so much more clear than what we have here. It's, for example, if we have X amount of the population vaccinated by Y date, we will reopen at this capacity. And so what we're finding, of course, in New York State is, and nationwide to some extent, is suddenly, boom, changes are made. You've got 5 minutes warning. It would be nice, especially as a festival organizer, to have a little bit of warning that is, more than a few minutes in advance.
Yeah, and I had an email from a listener earlier this hour named Andrew who wrote in about incentives. He said, Evan, it's incentives, incentives, incentives. You've got to find a way to convince people who are on the fence that they need to get the vaccine still. That's why we've got some vaccines sitting unused in a lot of places, maybe even here. tell them they can go to festivals if they are vaccinated. That will surely convince some. Does that work for you, Eric Fee?
Well, yes. I mean, your listener's not wrong because the state, of course, has rolled out this Excelsior Pass. And, you know, what we do know, and I think, you know, Dr. Walsh will come on and he would say the same thing. If we can have a festival, we can have even an indoor performance at Eastman Theater, for instance, that's very safe if we can guarantee that everyone is vaccinated. So what I'm really hoping for is that the state make some changes in regards to what vaccinated people can do. And why is it that vaccinated people only have a slight increase in capacity? If we have vaccinated people and it is only vaccinated people attending a festival or an indoor event or an outdoor event, then we should have perhaps unlimited capacity for them. And so that's the kind of guidance that we would really love to see.
Who are you most frustrated with then? Where's your ire directed
most
at?
Frustrated? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, the state government has been, you know, it's been tricky. Of course, as the other event organizers said, it is difficult to assess who is in charge with some of these bits of guidance. But I know that you said earlier you were discussing that some organizers were finding, oh, it doesn't work that way, right? With different locations,
right.
Different municipalities making their own rules. And I wrote down, but maybe it does. Because I was thinking about Erie County, and I was thinking about Erie County and how they pushed back on the state government. They said, no, we will go for a full capacity for the bills if we can prove that all attendees are vaccinated. So I do wonder if it's playing out a little bit differently across the state, even though it's technically not supposed to.
Yeah, and sometimes that just requires advocacy and communication from leadership. And I'm not saying that I know what the mayor of Rochester's office has done or other local leaders or state leaders who are not the governor or county leaders. I mean, I'm sure there have been some conversations, but you are right. In Erie County, they've been very public in saying, look, you want to set this limit on fan seating that starts in September. No, we think if we've got vaccine cards for all fans, we should fill that stadium. And they are advocating for that. We'll see if it works. But that has been a very public advocacy that we have not necessarily seen on behalf of, for example, festivals. The other thing I want to ask you about, Erica, and I'd briefly like to ask all of our guests to comment on this, and then what we'll do is we'll take a break and we'll get some feedback from listeners. And I'll go down a list here. We're trying to build a comprehensive list of where the festivals are, and I'll read that after the break. But, Erica, you know, when we think about what festivals are and what they represent in this community, there is a diversity of festivals and there's diversity of missions, but generally speaking, this is a festival town that, for not a lot of money, you can enjoy a lot of different stuff. You can enjoy art, music, events, just public gatherings, sometimes food for not very much money, all kinds of really neat and enjoyable stuff. And so that's why I used the word egalitarian earlier. This is not just about protecting wealthy white festivals or what have you. This is about saying, look, if you shut down festivals, despite vaccination efforts, despite outdoors being safer, despite cases plummeting, then what you are doing is, trust me, wealthy people will have entertainment. They can travel. They will find music. They will have events. They'll have home concerts. It is the population that can't do that that will lose here. That is one of the things that I think is pretty clear. And I wonder if you agree or disagree there, Erica.
I agree, but I would also add that I don't think it's just about providing entertainment or arts access to all. Of course, arts access for us is a festival. That's something that we are very passionate about. But what I would add is that festival studies have shown that having festivals and community events like these in cities and municipalities allow people to really form community and increased community self-esteem and community cohesion builds. And we have had this period of being so separate. And of course, we have a very, very difficult political situation right now with many fractions. And festivals allow communities to come together as one. So oftentimes we are looking at these festivals as a want and something that's totally superfluous. However, I would argue they really are a need, and we need to look at them as tools by which we draw this community together.
Orlando Ortiz, how do you see that?
Well, I agree with you in terms of, you know, like I mentioned earlier, with the Puerto Rican Festival being here for 50 years, one of my biggest, you know, I guess, concerns or worries is that, you know, too many years of without going through a festival, we lose some of that tradition and history that we have here. So I'm eager to celebrate, you know, our culture, our food, our music. But, you know, we encourage people to get more vaccinations so we can go back to that normalcy and be able to have these events like we used to. It might not look the same this year, given our current circumstance, but we certainly are looking forward to, you know, doing some type of celebration of our culture so we can continue that history and tradition here and not lose sight of that.
Jeff Spring, CEO of Rochester Events, operating the Lilac Festival, among others. What do you need most from government right now?
Well, clarity is certainly important. One of the frustrations that we've experienced is there are so many different rules for overlapping conditions, whether you're a restaurant or, like, we wanted to get a clarity on our arts and crafts show. And we were told, you know, there's no definition and set of rules for an arts and crafts show. So we had to kind of create a situation that was acceptable. And it's hard, Evan, to argue with what Erica was just saying, or Orlando. I've been in the event and festival business most of my life, and I would say that your local governments certainly understand and appreciate the value of community events, all the ones that we represent here today and the ones that go on around our community under normal times. I don't think anybody's questioning the value. The question is how quickly can we get back to business under, you know, safely? And that's the biggest frustration is, you know, what's going to work? What's going to make people comfortable? Not everyone is going to be 100% comfortable to go out to a concert where they're shoulder to shoulder. Younger people maybe, older people are going to want to tip their toe in the water a little bit and get back into it slowly. So it's a process. And, you know, other states, as has been mentioned in this program, have opened up and their numbers are lower. They're not finding problems with opening things wide up. So, you know, it's tricky, but I think it should be made a little bit easier.
After this only break of the hour, I will let listeners know as much as we know about the current slate of festivals, and we're going to try to keep adding to this to kind of let you know what we do know, and then we'll take some of your feedback. So let's get that only break as we talk festival planning 2021 on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation with candidates for Rochester City Council. There are 16 candidates for 5 positions, and the election is less than 2 months away. June 22nd is the Democratic primary, which typically decides the outcome for Rochester City Council. And council has a lot of work to do in regards to police reform, economic development, and more. Meet more of the candidates next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Looking down the list of other festivals not represented by guests on the show, as we mentioned, the Park Ave Festival canceled for this year. The Sterling Renaissance Festival plans to continue as normal following restrictions July 10th to August 15th. Cornhill canceled. The Jazz Festival, I admit, I don't get what's going on here. So folks from the Jazz Festival, you know, there was a lot of talk about moving to RIT's campus, you know, later than usual, maybe at the end of July into August. We have not yet seen a full plan, and I honestly don't know, but it doesn't look like Rochester will host a jazz festival this year. If there is one, it looks like it'll be at RIT Henrietta, and maybe we'll get some clarity. We invited them to join us, and they were not available. Flower City Brewers Festival will return on a smaller scale in August. Clothesline, planning to have a per-usual festival in September. And MAG director Jonathan Binstock sent us a statement just saying that they're going to plan to go ahead with Clothesline, and we'll make a final decision on feasibility in early August when they have a better understanding of all safety restrictions that are required at that point. Party in the Park, Not Certain Yet, and Pride. Just quoting from various sources in the community, there might not be a large Pride festival as usual, but maybe smaller organizations and businesses planning events during June Pride Month. And the Rainbow Seniors Rock Group is planning a Rainbow Seniors Rock picnic on July 11th at Genesee Valley Park Roundhouse for, quote, mature adults. So a lot of scaled back. Look, that's not a comprehensive list. I know there's more out there. And if you've got it, email me, and we'll create a list online on the show page at Connections so you can check it out, and we'll update it as we go here. Randy and Lyons on the phone. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi, Evan. How are you doing today?
Good, sir.
I've got a little bit of addition to your list right off the bat because this is my column this week about what festivals can we go to. So on the Buffalo side of things, the Mac and Cheese Festival is still on at the Riverworks. The Great New York State Fair is on for a long run at a limited capacity. The Saratoga Balloon and Barbecue Festival is still on, and the Lake George Wine and Barbecue Festival are still on.
Okay.
If you're reaching a little bit further around the state. But a lot of the festivals that I've talked to are very concerned about the high number of people that are refusing to be vaccinated as an issue. They don't want to be known as cluster centers, and it would be nearly impossible to separate that population.
Okay. So at least closer to home for you, more cancellations and more scaling back.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I know that we're going to be participating in the Lilac Festival. I'm so happy that that's still going to be taking place.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, I think it's better that we have a festival that's scaled down than none at all. You know, people are really would like, as a lot of your guests have said, they're really looking for something to do. And they're, like you said, also a higher percentage of the population is getting vaccinated and want to do these activities.
Yeah, I got you. Absolutely. Randy, thank you for this. Thanks for that note. Writing for the Times of Wayne County, if you want to check out more about what Randy is researching and writing about. On the subject of the state fair that listeners have been asking about, the governor tweeted yesterday himself that the state fair's coming back for 2021, but it will be scaled back. So some celebration and some frustration in the reaction to the governor there. Let me get Katie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
My name's Katie Malarkey. I was calling to kind of implore people to think about the small businesses and the nonprofit organizations in Rochester. I'm currently on the board of Parenting Village, and one of our main fundraisers and connection events every year is the Parenting Village's Family Fest. Last year would have been our 8th festival, and we obviously canceled it because of COVID. And we've met and we've decided not to hold it again this year. And we're looking at ways to connect the community in other, you know, more socially distanced ways. But for small organizations like us, that was our main fundraiser for the year that would keep us going and offering our free programming to the county throughout the year. And so just keeping in mind how this is impacting local businesses and organizations, I think, is important.
Great point, Katie, and I really appreciate that point. In fact, let me add to Katie's phone call there. Got a couple of emails from listeners asking me to remind our audience that the vendors at festivals are not all just people who come in from outside the region. There are some local vendors. There are some local artists who really need the revenue that they get from these kinds of festivals. There are local artists who are performers, and who really, you know, sort of build to these kinds of events. So can I ask all of our guests, and Erica Fee, let me start with you. When you think about the impact, not just on you, not just on the organizers like Jeff and Orlando, but the individuals who participate and build up to this, can you give me a sense for how important these festivals are?
Oh, God. Well, especially for a Fringe Festival, this is an opportunity for performers to have a platform, right? And so for performers to you know, whether they are just starting off, they're emerging artists, or whether they're superstars, to often get in front of audiences. For the Fringe, I can say specifically, a lot of these artists are hurting because not only have festivals been closed, but performing arts have been closed. So it's a really serious situation. You know, we need to be able to provide opportunities to these artists. And it is something that magnifies because the ripple effects of festivals, of course, go on far further than most people realize.
What do you think, Orlando Ortiz?
Well, for me, just like Erica, I think the local vendors, you know, are a big one for me. You know, the local bands, you know, I look at, you know, the many talented musicians we have in the Latino community here in Rochester. And truly the festival, given the size and the capacity that we normally have, is really the pinnacle of, you know, their, you know, some of them, their careers, you know, in terms of playing at the Puerto Rican Festival. So they're very much looking forward to showcase their talent at the Puerto Rican Festival. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we want to make sure that we continue providing that exposure to them, to some that, you know, go on to be nationally known. The biggest part for me would be the children, right? We know that people are growing in Rochester may not be as closely tied to the Puerto Rican culture. So having an event like the Puerto Rican Festival allows children and families to continue that rich history that we have as Puerto Ricans and make sure that children growing up in Rochester continue having that background as to where they came from and their culture.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Springett, what do you think?
Well, there's no question that many of the local musicians, their livelihood is based on their performance. It's not a part-time gig for them. And we made a conscious decision when we decided to have a live entertainment, when we were permitted to have live entertainment, I should say, might be a better phrase, to use only Rochester local musicians and get as many of them in there as we could and show some support. And the same way with food vendors. All our food vendors this year are local. And typically we bring in a mix of local and out-of-town food vendors, as well as performers from around the country. But because of the limitations, and we had people calling who wanted to perform from all over the state back in the time we were planning it, when you couldn't cross state lines and come in, you know, if you're a performer. So without going through a quarantine situation.
Yeah.
So it's very important. And we'd like to be tried to be and have been as supportive to the local musician community as possible.
Yeah.
A lot of great talent here in Rochester.
No doubt about it. Let me give you all about a minute apiece to close here that will address this final question. Every festival is different in terms of your planning and your needs. How close to your actual event can you be and still make significant changes for planning, event size, et cetera? Erica Fee with the Fringe Festival, what's the answer there?
Oh, boy. Well, I think that here's what I would say. All of us have learned that we can be a lot closer to the event than we ever thought that we could be.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, if we are increasing capacities, that's a lot easier than decreasing capacities. But major changes to your festival structure less than 6 months out from the festival is really tricky.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Orlando Ortiz, for you at the Puerto Rican Festival, you're still working on the actual dates, likely August, but how close can you be to the actual festival and still make big changes?
It all depends on the capacity size, but I would say 2 to 3 months we could still pull something off that's pretty, you know, significant and of the quality that we anticipate of our events.
Wow. Okay, and Jeff Springett, for you?
I'm going to turn the question around just a little bit on you, Evan. We were given 5 weeks' notice that we could put this festival on. So forget about changing. We've had 5 weeks to organize and plan this year's Lilac Festival.
Wow. And I guess that's why I say, Jeff, I know managing a pandemic is hard at every level, public health, individual businesses, individual citizens, government at every level. It's very hard. But my sense was, you go back to the middle of winter, and we knew, really the beginning of winter, we knew the vaccines were going to be here. We knew the supply was going to increase. And it wasn't clear to me why you weren't called by somebody saying, hey, Jeff, things seem a little bleak right now, but trust me, it's going to be a different world when we get to April, May, June. and we want to give you a sense that, you know, we want you to plan to be operational, and we'll let you know if you got to pull it back. I mean, did anybody call you and say anything like that?
We've been trying to get clarity since January, February. But in fairness, Evan, hindsight is always 20/20. You can say,
well, we elect people for foresight. That's why we elect people.
You can say, yeah, they should have done that. I mean, I'm a little bit on the other side of the fence because, yeah, vaccines are going to come, but did everybody know for sure? Yeah, they could have had plans. As a matter of fact, I submitted proposals based on rules that existed back in January. And then I said, 2 months before the festival, let's meet and see where we are. If it's better, we can loosen up. If it's worse, we can scale back. So to your point, there could have been a lot more conversation about that. Mm-hmm. And I submitted, as I said, proposals for every aspect of the Lilac Festival back in January, with those caveats. And people were very busy fighting the pandemic, quite frankly.
I got you. Yeah.
It was very difficult to get anybody to even listen or even look at the proposals.
And I got to jump in, Jeff. I mean, look, I take the point, and I'm glad they've been fighting the pandemic, and in many ways we should be grateful for so much of that. But good luck to all of you. Jeff, CEO of Rochester Events. Good luck with the Lilac Festival. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Orlando Ortiz, let us know what's going on with the Puerto Rican Festival. We'll talk again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Erica Fee, producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right. More connections coming up in a moment.